So today we are starting this new text called Kindle Life. And if you have read the introduction, this text covers both. It covers those who would like to study the subject of Vedanta and also advanced seekers. And the word Vedanta means the end of the Vedas or the goal of the Vedas. So the Vedas are our spiritual textbooks. They are divided into four different Vedas. And in the introductory section of the Vedas, they deal with nature, description of nature, and the rituals, the elaborate rituals that are offered by the priests. And the third portion is the portion of knowledge or the Upanishads. And some of the masters who come here, the teachers have done currently. Vimalji is doing Prashnopanishad. We in this meditation class, we have done Kaivalya Upanishad. So Kindle Life is a text that tells us about Vedanta or the science of knowledge or the science of living, how one should live one's life. And ultimately, the goal of life is realization, self-realization, or knowledge of God. So what is Kindle and what is life? So life is the sum total of all our experiences. So at the body level, I see form, I hear sounds, I smell, I taste some food, and I touch, I feel. So all these sum total of the physical experiences. And then at the mind level, we get bound. Sometimes we get attached to something, we get so caught up. And then when we get it, we are happy. When we don't get it, we are unhappy. So the sum total of all the emotions that occur in the mind, joy, sorrow, anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, etc. And then at the intellectual level, it is the study. So the mind is the emotions like poetry or drama. At the intellectual level, it is the study of science, mathematics, what we study in universities, politics, all the art of governing. So all those things are the sum total of all the world's objects, emotions, and thoughts is life. But people think, when we think of life, we think of it, okay, from the day I was born, the day I died, so from womb to tomb. But the scriptures tell us that life, it does not begin only in the womb and end in the tomb, but it is a continuum. And even Darwin's theory of evolution talks about evolution from the lower to the higher. But our scriptures talk about evolution from lifetime to lifetime. So maybe in one lifetime I was a protozoa, then I became a fish, then a bird, and then an animal, and then a monkey, and then ultimately a human. And so life is not only what we experience in this particular body, but life is a continuum. And that's what will be covered in this book, that how our life, because what is happening to me in this life is as a result of my actions in my past life and in the this life itself, my past actions. So this actions will not only end at the time of death, but will continue, and how we should live our life so that our future may be good and ultimately we may evolve to the higher. So the topic of the first chapter is freedom and license. When they talk about license, they don't mean license like a driver's license or a license to, fly a plane but when they talk about license, what they mean is overindulgence. So we'll talk about that later. But as the teacher in this text has said, that our life at this moment is actually the best. That's what somebody said. It was the best of times and it was the worst of times.
Charles Dickens
said that in The Tale of Two Cities. Right. And how is it the best of times? Best of times because science has progressed so much. We have gone into space. We have explored the bottom of the ocean. we have, you know, gone to the atom, subatom particles, everything slowly and slowly we are discovering, even the furthest planets we have traveled to, and soon they are predicting men will land on Mars. And at the same time, economic prosperity is so much, you know, things that our grandparents could only imagine. They said the first computer was so big that it was twice the size of this room, and it was all valves and vacuum. And that could only do a small calculator that you buy in Kmart or Walmart, or, you know, for like $2 or $3, has 1,000 times the computing capability of that original computer. So that much we have progressed. And science has brought us a lot of prosperity also. You know, we all have cars, and then we have nice homes, and we have, you know, financially successful. We have our ability to travel. We can see the whole world with a computer, you know, virtually also you can experience so much. And so mankind has progressed. But the question is, are we really free? Are we really free? And the answer is, I'm not sure. Because you wake up in the morning, and if we turn on the water and say we don't get hot water, so upset. Or I don't get my favorite cereal. I pour the box and my favorite cereal is gone. Oh, I have to eat. Or I go to my office and my desk, the janitor has moved the papers. I get so upset. And it's constantly, you know, we find that from birth to death, we are under the influence of material things. From the time of birth, constantly we are dependent on things to make us happy. And that's what they say, that life does not even end after death, but it continues. Talking about death, this lady goes to the pharmacist and says, I'd like to buy some arsenic. So he says, Madam, do you know arsenic is a poison? She says, yes, I know that. Why do you want to buy arsenic? She says, I want to poison my husband. So the pharmacist says, ma'am, selling of arsenic is illegal. I can't sell it to you. She says, okay. So from her purse, she takes out a picture of her husband with the pharmacist's wife and shows it to him. He says, oh, why didn't you tell me you have a prescription? So from birth to death, we are constantly bombarded with all these, and we are just chasing after objects, thinking that objects will buy me happiness. And in the process, we lose all self-restraint. And that is called license. We'll talk a little more about license later on. But to intelligently enjoy this world, we have to live in self-restraint. You know, eating one piece of chocolate, as is in the book, is good. And then you eat two is okay. Three is better. But if you have to eat 10 or 20 or 30 pieces, then it becomes torture. And it's the same thing with any other indulgence. You know, overindulging in anything, you know, even too much of travel or too much of power, or like one person has too much power, then that person becomes a menace to society. So overindulgence in anything, and that's what the religious books teach us, that what religion teaches us, that we should live a life of intelligent self-restraint, where I do not give in just to the dictates of my mind. I felt like doing it, so I just did it. But I use my intellect, I use my thinking abilities, and then I live a life of self-restraint. Again, it does not mean that we don't enjoy. You know, there's nothing wrong in enjoying a chocolate, or, you know, enjoying some clothes or buying something, a nice car, you know, all those things are okay. But when... That's what Mahatma Gandhi said, that there is enough in this world for everybody's need, but there is not enough for one person's greed. So when greed becomes the overriding factor, where earning is okay, I should work hard, I should earn. But if I'm only working for self-interest, for me and me alone, then what happens is I want more wealth, I want more power, I want more this, And how do I get it? By taking from somebody else. So true freedom is living with a feeling of contentment. Contentment does not mean that you shouldn't work hard or you should not be successful. But the reason to work hard is not only for me, but I should share. I should use my talents to help society, use my abilities to help society, use part of my money, part of my efforts, and I should teach others. So religion teaches us to how to live a life of moral values and intelligent self-restraint. But whenever we hear the word restraint or freedom, we get very upset. Oh, I nobody can restrain my freedom, or I live in a free country. But as we just said, little things bother us. And as even it said in the book, like the traffic lights. Now we say, well, traffic light is an imposition on my freedom. It is not. Because if there was no traffic lights, there would be traffic jams, there would be collisions, there would be accidents. Nothing would move if all the four people started moving from all. So having stop signs or having a traffic light is a way to regulate the traffic so that, you know, things move smoothly, especially in big cities where there's thousands of cars going through, you know, at one time. If there was no rules, if there was no traffic. So similarly, religion teaches us how to efficiently live our life, following the right principles and living a life of control, a life of... So freedom, Swami Chinmayananda, in another place, he says, not to do what I feel like doing is freedom. See, we think freedom is the other way around. If I feel like doing it, I should do it. But actually, then you are a slave to your mind. So I feel like doing something, but it's not the right thing. So not doing what I feel like doing is true freedom. I feel like doing it, but it's not the right thing, so I won't do it. Or maybe it will harm somebody, like I speak something or I do something which is harming others. So not doing what I want. An efficient function of the body can only happen when we follow certain principles. That's why we have the constitution of the country. That's why we have the laws of, you know, the laws of speed, the laws of living, who can own guns, who cannot own guns, who can... All those laws are made. The food is regulated, you know, what should be the ingredients. Our drugs are tested for safety. So all these laws are meant to protect us and to protect society, even though the manufacturers of drugs may say, oh, the FDA is too strict and it's not letting us make drugs. But if there was no FDA, there would be no quality control. We wouldn't know whether we buy a 10 milligrams of some drug, whether it actually contains 10 or contains 5 or 15 or 20. So regulations at times may seem like an interference in our freedom, but actually these regulations are meant to protect us. But not following these regulations result in license. And license, as we spoke earlier, is overindulgence, where I have no control over what I see, you know, anything and everything. I just let it go through my eyes. I see things in the internet. I listen to gossip. I listen to some talk radio where a lot of violence is being... I have no control over my tongue, over my, you know, my speech. I say whatever I want. I do whatever. So we have to live a life of intelligent restraint, not only in the sense organs, but the organs of action. So the sense organs, as we said, are eyes, ears, nose, skin, and tongue. And the organs of action are hands, feet, speech, genital organs, procreative organs, and excretory organs. So these are the five organs of action. So all have to be controlled, all have to be lived with intelligent use of all these, our abilities. I mean, I can speak whatever I want. I have the freedom to speak. But if I say something that is hurtful, if I say something that is dishonest, that's why in the Gita it is said that whatever you speak should be priyam, hitam, and satyam. So it should be the truth, But truth, if it's going to hurt somebody, then maybe it's not. So it should be beneficial and it should be priyam, it should be pleasing. So what we say should not only be truthful, but it should be pleasing and it should not be hurtful. If I, by saying something, I'm hurting somebody's religious sentiments or somebody's emotions, then those things should be avoided. So overindulgence, either in organs of senses or organs of action, are both wrong. And what happens in this world, why does license come in? Why do we live a life of self-control? Part of the problem is advertising. Because we are constantly bombarded with ads, you know, buy this. My phone is working fine, but if you don't have the newest i10, then you are useless. My car is running fine, but then this new model of the car comes out and they say, you know, come and trade it in, we'll give you a good deal. And same thing, my house is comfortable, but, you know, they keep telling you, you need a bigger house, you need a better this, you need to buy new dresses, you need to buy new jewelry, you need to... Constantly we are bombarded, and then they have the summer sale and the winter sale. And like, you know, when we go shopping, some people like to walk in the shopping mall, and we had talked about that in the Gita class. You know, we go for a walk in the shopping mall, and there is a sign 30% off. And then we walk a little further, and the same item is 25% off. So this item is 25, that guy was selling for 30. Let me go get it. Maybe it won't be available tomorrow. They don't know that it's the same guy who owns both the stores. And one place he puts 30 and one place he puts 25. And then you have fear. If I don't buy it, then maybe, you know, tomorrow the sale won't be available. Even I don't need it, I go and buy it. And then I take it home and then my spouse says, where did you get this dress? It doesn't look nice. Then I get all stressed out. So that's what they are saying, that when people advertise, why do they do that? Because they want us to consume. They want us to buy. They want us, and they say, well, the economy works. Economy works on consumption. That is true. But if I buy things that I don't need, all they're doing is keep making it. And that's how we are depleting the world's resources. You know, so much plastic is... We are creating so much plastic that our oceans are being filled with plastic, and our children are going to have mountains of garbage, mountains of plastic. And this plastic lasts, they say, for decades. You know, it does not get, it's not like a tree or a branch that, you know, which is organic, which gets consumed very quickly. A plastic thing that you release, throw into the ocean, for years it will, you know, poison the fish. So what the solution is, that don't buy. Don't buy things that you don't need. Have discrimination and discretion in what we buy, what we consume. Overindulgence in anything is wrong. So license is living a life of intelligent self-control, intelligent restraint. And religious books are the ones, and that's why they have, you know, Christianity has the Ten Commandments. Buddhism has the, you know, the dharmas of Buddha. In our Bhagavad Gita, they have the values, and then they have the do's and don'ts in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The Quran has its own rules of conduct. And the masters, reason they made these rules was they saw that that's what happened to the Roman Empire. Excessive indulgence, you know, overindulgence in food. And then soon the people were indulging so much in all these sense pleasures that there was no soldiers left. Even the soldiers were just enjoying life, and ultimately the Roman Empire collapsed because of overindulgence. So that is what that chapter talks about, that it is okay to have freedom. It is okay to buy, to possess, to work hard and get. We are not saying that you should not buy, you should not work hard, or you should not enjoy life. One person sent me a message a few days back. He says, I don't like spirituality. I like to enjoy life. So his implication was that people who are spiritual are boring. You know, they don't enjoy life. And that is That is a total misunderstanding of spirituality. Because the joy we get in intelligently using our equipment is far more than what you can get by overindulgence. And ultimately, what spirituality teaches us, that the joy is all within us. And once you discover the inner joy, I think those of you who meditate regularly, when the mind is very still and when you are in touch with that inner self, the joy that we experience is so much more than the joy you can get from worldly objects. So it does not mean that you have to live a boring life and you don't eat, don't drink, don't travel. No, do all those, but do it in moderation and be very discriminatory on what is my goal in life. Where am I going in life? What is my purpose? If my purpose is just to live, eat, drink, and be merry, then my life is like any other animal. But if I truly want to evolve spiritually, then I have to control myself and turn my mind's attention from the world to the Lord within. And once you discover that inner joy, then nothing in the world can compare. And if you look at all these saints and prophets, they were all very poor. None of them lived in a palace. None of them had... They lived a life of extreme simplicity. Why? Because they have detachment. Vairagya is very important. So detachment from the world and attachment to the Lord. So that is the message of this particular chapter. That live in freedom, but not in license, not in overindulgence. So that is the essence of this particular chapter. Anybody has any comments, any questions, anything?
What exactly means kindle?
Oh, kindle. Sorry, I should have talked to him. Kindle means to light. So how we can make our life bright? So how do you kindle the light? Just as when the firewood is there, when you light it, they say it's kindled. The fire is kindled. Yeah, I'm sorry. I talked about life. I didn't mention the word kindle. So kindle comes from knowledge. So when they say light up your life, it means the light of knowledge. That's why when we offer the light to the Lord and then we let everybody takes it, that's the same idea, that the Lord, who is the source of all knowledge, all wisdom, made that light of knowledge shine in my heart. So kindle means to lighten up, to make our life bright, to make our life brilliant. So how, and this book will teach us how to kindle our life, how to make it brighter, make it wiser, make it brilliant. Thank you, that's a good, I meant to do that, but I somehow missed it.
Anyway, in the Christian Bible, this is the same thing that St. Paul said. He said, all things are legal, but not everything's beneficial, to kind of take it from that saying.
Right.
And it reminds me too, like in Buddhism, they talk about the middle way. You know, it's okay to enjoy things, but not going too far.
Yes.
That's why this China always tells about America is this is a shock for Chinese people, because even though Americans, we all buy so much, we are the customers, even though America is so much debt to China,
right,
they're still giving it to us. They believe America is better to have money in here rather than with them.
True.
So if we don't shop, they will lose. But we have the shop.
So they keep selling to us.
It's not holistically good, though. And that's the thing we talk about, because it keeps this economic machine running, but is it a sustainable? No, it's not.
It's debt.
And it's not
as long as they are okay with that, the people are enjoying here, like giving like a credit card, keep on buying.
Right, and they keep on taking that
payment and keep going.
And then so much is just junk. There's so much like on the internet, it's based on deceit. Mm-hmm. I mean, these companies are making money based on deceit.
Right.
And that's just a really, it's a bad energy. And it's just, I mean, it really, I don't think it should be legal even. But,
true.
But I'm wise enough, you know, but I've had these things come up. I saw that and I'm like, why can they even... Are they even allowed to be so deceptive?
They are controlling right now after the Facebook fell down. Now they are really looking into it.
Right. But also, I think a lot of the things now, the internet, you don't know which country it originated from when you buy the product, where it was made and what was the quality, even the food, even the drugs. So that's why the whole thing is.
They have this app called Wish, and there's another one, a partner. And what they do is they'll show a picture of something, of something that you usually buy for more here, but they're actually reverse engineering in China. When you get it, it's not acceptable. So you still have to pay for the. So it's really, it's just filling our landfills. It's just junk. It's obsolete.
Right. We
don't talk about this, but it's kind of part of the reality, though. So it's just important to be prudent.
True. But that's why Buddha, if you look at his life, when he started on the spiritual journey, he really fasted and he really made himself so weak. He would not eat for days and just drink water, and slowly he would even start cutting them down till he became skin and bones. And for years he was torturing his body, and he learned how to fast longer and longer and longer. And then he realized that it's not getting him anywhere. And that's when he came to the life of moderation, where you live a life of control, but not to the point of torturing the body. There's a book called Siddhartha. I don't know, has anybody read it? It's very interesting. Siddhartha was not Buddha, but it was another young man who becomes a monk and has the same name Siddhartha as Buddha. Maybe a work of fiction, I'm not sure, but very, very beautiful book, where he does the same thing. First, he tortures his body and lives in starvation. And then he realizes, he gets tired of that, and he's hungry and he's stressed out. And he goes into town, and he's a very handsome young man. He then meets a prostitute, a lady who owns a house of prostitution. And she takes a liking to this young man, and she adopts him. And then for months and years, he's overindulging. He's enjoying every pleasure, food and drinks and whatever in that house of, and he just overindulges himself. And then one day he meets the Buddha. He comes across the real Buddha, and then he looks at his face, and he sees so much peace and so much. Because Buddha was traveling with his monks, and he says, what have I come to? I was so serious on the path of spirituality. So from one extreme of torture, he went to the other extreme. And then towards the end of the book, he realizes moderation. So he becomes a boatman. It's a very, very beautiful book. And he lives a life of moderation, self-control. He lives a very simple life. And as he's rowing his boat in the river, and slowly, slowly, slowly he contemplates, and in that silence of the river and the silence of the rowing, he becomes a realized master. And it's a very, very beautiful book where you can see how this young man, when he goes from one extreme to the other, but when he comes to the middle ground and starts doing less. See, that's what they say, less is more. Doing less is doing more, and doing nothing, you're doing everything. So the point is that ultimately when you are in deep meditation, you come to a state of nothingness, where the mind is still and I'm not doing anything, but I just am. I am. That is the goal of meditation. So that's exactly, I totally agree with you. The extremes are bad, but it's the middle path. But this book is very good. I read it when I was a teenager. It's a very, very beautiful book called Siddhartha.
Buddha is there in the Netflix, the whole story.
Of Buddha, I see.
I saw that.
Right.